I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, November 14th, 2020, and this is episode 94 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. We're getting closer to the 100th episode. I scheduled it out, and it looks like it's going to be the last week of the year will be episode 100. And I'm thinking of what I should do. I should do something like to celebrate something special for that episode. And I'm not exactly sure what that should be. So I'm in brainstorming mode now. I've seen other podcasts where they have things like they'll set up a line for listeners to call in and leave messages or write in or something. And I'm considering doing that. But So if you have any thoughts about what might be cool to do for the 100th episode of this podcast, leave them in the comments, either on the website or on YouTube, and I am listening and thinking of things. So this week's best thing is, it's got to be that the certifications are in from Georgia and Arizona, and we have a new president. I, for one, am greatly relieved, but I'm not dancing in the streets yet. I won't dance in the streets until January 20th because I'm a little bit of a cynic and I just don't trust anyone or anything. I have no faith in any institution, any American institution. So we will see what happens as things move forward, as unlikely as anything is. And I was talking about this on Jeffy Kennedy's show. I did an interview with her and I will link to that in the show notes. But I'm just a generally cynical person. So in some ways. I will dance in the streets on the day that it is actually done and no more shenanigans can be pulled. And, but yes, relief with caution. Writing update. So I'm still banging away at that first draft. I've written 27,329 words in November. I have a total of 33,419 words in the manuscript. And I probably won't write today. I have been taking Saturdays off. Making sure my word count is up so I can have that day off just to clear my brain. I've got a lot of other work to do. And the first draft still feels terrible, but I'm keeping going. I am not quitting. And I'm going to get to the end and then figure things out. One of the things that has been bothering me is I haven't quite locked in on the voice yet. I mentioned last week talking about trying it in first person, it's third person, thinking about omniscient. I've been looking at omniscient narration, or at least using parts, like having part of the story be in omniscient. And one of my friends recommended Practical Magic by Alice Hoffman and said that that book is omniscient. And I got the audiobook and I started listening to that. I haven't seen that movie in a million years, but I know that the book was very, very different. And it is omniscient narration, and it is an interesting kind of study in that for what I'm doing and trying to figure out is that, what does that give me? Like, what are the benefits besides being able to, you know what every character is thinking and being able to move around and know more than any one character would ever know? From a reader's perspective, what are you getting and what is the energy and the vibe of it? And it's interesting. In Practical Magic, I'm only about 15-20% through the audiobook. And I don't know that I'll actually finish it because the pacing is not really my thing. It's a little slower than I would like. And the storytelling, it is interesting. I mean, it's great for this, for studying, but it's just in terms of just enjoying the book, it's not my preference. The omniscient narrator does give you that ability to have this big picture view, and you can still go in closer and know people's thoughts, but it also creates a distance. If you're used to reading things in first person or close third person, where you're only in that person's mind and you are seeing the world through their eyes, when you're pulling it back and seeing the whole world through this God's eye or narrator's eye view, there's a distance there and you're not sinking into the character. So even as that book is sort of a character study, it's a character-driven book. It's definitely not plot-driven. And I do understand these characters really well because we learn so much about them. But I'm not drawn into the story and it's not a page-turner. And that's not what you know, Alice Hoffman was trying to do with that book. I don't think she was trying to create a page turner. She was doing something different, which I respect. But it's like, am I trying to do that? And is that sort of narration going to take away from creating a page turner, which is my preference for my books? I also started listening to the audiobook for Mama Day by Gloria Naylor, which was one of a very influential book on me growing up. Like, I read it a bunch of times. I read Lyndon Hills a bunch of times. And there's been decades since I've read it. I've been meaning to get back to it. So I got through the first couple hours of that book too yesterday. And she uses an omniscient narrator for part of it. So she's got a bunch of different things going on. She's got some third person. She's got some omniscient. She's got some first person narration. And it's all very interestingly done and well crafted. Again, not a page turner. Although, you know, I adored that book growing up, and I still really love what she's doing with it. And it is a little bit more plot forward than Practical Magic, but just by a hair. So her omniscient is told from like the community. You know, it's a we. It's almost a second. Is that a second person? But not quite. It's a we that is an omniscient we, because it knows what people are thinking. In addition to being from, you know, told from, and I would even venture to say from the women of the community, I'm going to assume. And so the first section is like that. And then it goes into these dual first person perspectives of these characters talking to one another, but from a future, you know, from maybe now. Like, when you did this, when I walked into your office, you know, I was thinking this. And then it changes to his perspective. It's a woman and a man. And then it comes back, and the next section will be a third person, and then it will be an omniscient. And that's really interesting. And so the question is, do I need to mix things up? Would that make things feel better? Are there some characters that I could do from a first person? I've only tried from my main character, trying it in the first person, and it didn't work. But maybe I could experiment with some of the other characters, since I'm doing this, you know, fast draft, as a way to discover that, and I haven't locked in on it yet. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. I think I'm going to continue listening to Mama Day, just because I don't remember the story. Like, there's things I remember about it that have stuck out, but moment to moment, what's going to happen, I don't know. It also does an interesting thing in that book where it sort of tells you at the front, like, that first section is your setting up this location, which is another character, and all about the, you know, kind of the history of the location and seminal historical characters that have influenced the main characters of this book. Anyway, I've lost my train of thought. So I'm going to continue with Mama Day just to remind myself what happens. And I'm still trying to figure this thing out. I mean, 30 something thousand words in, and, you know, the story is flowing. And so this is still, you know, the fast drafting is still helping me, because I am understanding what happens. I am seeing the holes in my outline and my synopsis. And fast drafting is really the only way that I know how to do that. But this sort of, how is the story going to be told? What is the style? What is the narrative device? Who is telling the story? Who are they telling it to? In Mama Day, there's one point where the omniscient narrator is like, you know, breaks the fourth wall and talks to the reader and says, you know, you are reading these words. You're hearing our voice in your mind. You're not actually hearing a literal voice, which is interesting because I am listening to the audiobook. So I am hearing the actor's portrayal of the voice, which is something I don't think that Gloria Naylor considered when this book came out, in the 80s, maybe? I have to look and see when these books came out. Maybe it was early 90s or the late 80s. Maybe she did. I don't know. I guess they had audiobooks back then, like on cassette tapes or something. But it breaks the fourth wall in a book, talking to the reader about the experience of reading it and envisioning the voice in your mind. And that's also really, really interesting. It's a great book, even though I don't remember what happens in it. I remember loving it, and the legacy it has left has really influenced me. And a lot of what I'm writing now actually owes a lot to this book and some of the themes and ideas and characters that have just settled in the back of my mind and just influenced me as a writer for my whole life. So it is kind of cool kind of going back and experiencing it again. Also talking about fast drafting, Jeffy Kennedy had mentioned on her podcast about ratios, talking about that she had tried fast drafting and it did not work for her. And yeah, it doesn't work for everyone. And I think she was talking about like the ratio of time drafting versus time revising. And since she's a discovery writer and she writes, I believe she said, you know, it takes her 55 to 60 working days to write a novel and then about 10 days to revise. And that was an appropriate ratio for her. For me, you know, if I write a chapter, I don't know exactly how many days it takes me to write a book. I love spreadsheets, but I haven't, you know, gone that deep into timing things like that. But I know that I can do a chapter, I can fast draft a chapter in either one or two sprints, depending on how long the chapter is. So let's say two sprints, 40 minutes to write a chapter. That chapter will be 3,000 words or so, 3,000 to 4,000 words. That'll take me 3 to 4 hours to revise the first revision. So 40 minutes to write, 4 hours to revise. That's kind of my ratio. Now that revision isn't the final thing. I'll do another pass. I'm at about three to four passes, depending on the deadline and the time and how much time I have. But I can get a clean, you know, that 4 hours will give me a clean version that someone else could read. And I'll probably do that third pass after that, just a much faster pass, which might take 20 minutes just to make sure it's clean and line edit, you know, kind of. So in a three pass version, you've got 4 hours and it's maybe 5 hours. Let's call it 5 hours for a chapter that might be 3,000 to 4,000 words. I should say that this math works because my starting chapters are much shorter than my ending. So I'm taking 2,000 words and turning it into 3,000 to 4,000 words, which is why the math seems a little off. If I, a 20 minute sprint, get me 1,000 words. Yeah. So starting at 2, ending at 3 to 4. Thought I'd clarify that. I could sit down and take those 4 hours to write the chapter out in a very clean way the first time. But like I said last week, you know, that doesn't work for me because I change things so much. I'm not a person who can sit down and write the story from beginning to end and not make a lot of changes afterwards. Even with the outlining and the plotting that takes a long time, I still spend that another long amount of time revising. And that's just the way my brain works. That's just the way it works for me. Also because, you know, these books, if I'm talking about the Earthsinger Chronicles, they've got 4, 5, 6 POVs. They've got multiple plot lines that are intersecting. I'm dealing with, you know, 7 books in the series total and all of the events of that I have to keep in my brain and in my organizational system. And so, yeah, it's a lot to manage and to handle. And that's another reason why I take the first pass to get the story. And then that second pass, that next 4 hours or so, is weaving things in, is checking things. It includes some research and review and checking the story Bible and then, you know, polishing the prose, but also wrangling everything and all the ideas. It's painting the walls and putting down the carpet. Whereas before it was just, you know, studs. So I think it is really cool to hear about different people's processes and to see how it works for them. If you're trying to figure out your own process as a writer, you know, listen to a bunch of people and maybe try a bunch of different things until you come upon something that works for you. Because that's kind of what I did, you know. I tried various things until I stumbled upon the method. And really, it was doing a lot of research. It was reading a lot of craft books, going to workshops, and then listening to what resonated with me. I did a workshop years and years ago through the Washington Romance Writers with Liz Pelletier and Candace Havens from Entangled. And I think I'd heard about fast drafting before, but that's really when it solidified for me. And they were talking about your brain and turning off your editor and getting into the flow state and getting through that first draft as quickly as possible. Also, this week I was rereading parts of Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, which this is the book that has the essay Shitty First Drafts, which is, went around. I mean, I would see it everywhere. I'll see if I can find it online and link to it because I know it's available online. And that just, you know, gives you, I had to, especially after last week's podcast, and I was just thinking about how bad it felt to write this, reminding myself why I do this and why it's the right way for me. The next essay immediately after it is called Perfectionism. And I posted about this on Instagram because it was another reminder. You know, the very first sentence in this essay says, "Perfectionism is the voice of the oppressor, the enemy of the people. It will keep you cramped and insane your whole life. And it is the main obstacle between you and a shitty first draft." I think perfectionism is based on the obsessive belief that if you run carefully enough, hitting each stepping stone just right, you won't have to die. Anne Lamott is a really interesting writer. Her personality comes through, or at least the version of the personality that she puts into her writing comes through very strongly and on the page. I reread this whole thing. This is a great book. If you don't have it, I recommend it because it's just full of these thoughts that are super helpful. And for me, this works for nonfiction as well. I just turned in my column for Galaxy's Edge magazine, which I do every other month. I had a guest blog post that I had to do the same day, actually. And I've been putting them off because I just was procrastinating them. So I sat down, I pulled out my Free Write Traveler, I did a fast draft of both of them. The next day I came back and revised them, and I turned them in, and I was like, whew. So yeah. Still working through it, still feels terrible, but I am moving forward with my draft of my novel. And I need to continue moving forward with the research also. And hopefully I'll settle into the voice and the strategy of the narrative device that I want to use in this book. Because I think it is going to be different. I think the story just requires it to be different. And it's a matter of finding what's going to work for me and for this story. In other news, I'm participating in something called Romancing the Runoff, which is supporting democracy and voting rights groups in Georgia for the runoff election. I'm donating signed copies of the first three books in the Earthsinger Chronicles, and there's a big auction with lots of items. The auction begins November 18th, I believe. They've already raised about $85,000 or more by this time. By the time you're hearing this, it'll be way more by the time of recording in monetary donations. And they're doing the auction to raise even more money. And the organizations being benefited are Fair Fight, Black Voters Matter, and the New Georgia Project. So I will put a link in the show notes if you're interested in checking out all of the auction items when it comes up this week, and in donating. It's sort of to honor Stacey Abrams, who writes romance under the name Selena Montgomery, and her efforts to promote democracy and voting in Georgia. And yeah, I'm excited about that. This came together really quickly, and it's really exciting how many people have joined up and offered goods and books and all kinds of things. I don't even know because the auction site hasn't come up, but on Twitter, you would see people saying what they were donating. And it was just a huge organization by the romance community really stepping up and following Stacey Abrams' lead, and it's super exciting. Also, I wanted to recommend an episode of one of my favorite podcasts, which is Lexicon Valley with John McWhorter. And it's a podcast about language. It's a linguistics podcast. But he did an episode on white authors writing Black English, or AAVE, which is African-American Vernacular English. I think that's what it's called. But you know, there's a question came in about agents and editors advising white authors that if they have their characters speaking Black English in their books, they shouldn't do that because it's somehow racist. And he really breaks it down. It's a great episode. His opinion is that it is not racist. And I know it's fraught, and especially in these times when there's so much kind of confusion and disagreement about what is appropriate and what is not. I think that the impetus to not be racist obviously is wonderful. But if you're going to either have Black characters who would be speaking in a way that's very natural to them and not writing them that way, are you whitewashing those characters? You know, that's the question he brings up. Or are you just not going to write Black characters because you don't want to deal with the issue at all, which is another thing that I know that authors are doing. They don't want to get accused of doing it wrong, so they'll just be like, okay, no Black people in this book. Or they'll have Black people speaking in ways that they wouldn't necessarily, like if they're around their family or something. I mean, some Black people do speak the King's English around their family. That's fine. But, you know, most of the time, a lot of us code switch. I don't code switch as much as some people do. Like it varies, you know, and you want to be true to the character and true to the way that they speak without being stereotypical, without like writing in some weird dialect. It's difficult. You know, it's a very difficult issue and he really breaks it down well. And I think it's worth listening to and considering that as we try to not be racist, are we sometimes going in the opposite direction of sort of trying to assimilate everybody into the same culture, into sameness, when we're not the same, when we do have different cultures and values and speak differently at different times and among different people? And if you can't represent that in your fiction because you're afraid of backlash, then what is that doing to the art? And that's something that I think about a lot as things get canceled and people get told that they can't write certain things or that they shouldn't write certain things or that those things won't be bought and put into the marketplace. It's a discussion that's worth having because it is complex and layered and it's so easy to get wrong. But he points out instances where white writers have gotten it right. And, you know, as we do research and as we try to figure out how to create characters and be true to them, it's something that we're going to confront and that we should confront. And we shouldn't just be like, nope, don't do it under any circumstances. So I will link to that episode in the show notes as well. Finally, Pitch Wars mentors were announced last week after I had recorded my podcast. I am a part of a mentoring team along with Denny S. Bryce, and our mentee is author Kayla Coleman. Her novel is called Daria, and it is a Grim Reaper paranormal romance that I'm super excited about. We are working on the editorial letter for her as we speak. And so for the next few months, we'll be working with her and getting her manuscript revised and edited and ready for the agent showcase, which is in January, I think. So congratulations to all of the Pitch Wars mentees, and congratulations to everyone who actually submitted and took that step forward, even if you weren't selected. It was really hard to make the decision. There were so many good manuscripts, and we just had to find someone that we thought we could help, that both of us could agree on, that whose story we were engaged by, who we felt that we could work with. And I'm really excited to be working with Kayla. And so, that process is ongoing. So that is it for me for this week. I hope that you all have a wonderful week. I hope that the news cycle calms down. And I personally am back to ignoring it as much as possible. There were a few days in there where I was like, oh, what are they saying? What are they saying? And it's like, they're always saying the exact same thing. So not that interesting. I still feel like the news media has a lot to answer for in terms of their role in all of the foolishness that has been going on. So I do feel some type of way about that. So I'm trying to figure out how, you know, alternate ways to get my news that from places that don't feel so skeevy and so complicit in everything that's been going on. But yeah, that's me. I'm going to continue working on the book for NaNoWriMo and the draft and feeling however I'm feeling about it, working through that and just pushing forward. So I will talk to you next week. And once again, if you do have any ideas about the 100th episode of the podcast, please leave a comment. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating and review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.